welcome the FFC because it's always advantageous and empowering to start with them, so that when we go into the other areas, at least we have had their perspective. And we have got so the introduction.
Sorry, point of order, Chair. Chair, just for clarity, we're not Corate, and if we're not Corate, are we in a position to continue with this meeting?
We are in a meeting that we are going to get a presentation, and a presentation does not need us to Corate in
you,
a meeting of a presentation. I am then going to, after the introduction, I am then going to reflect on the status of other members. Can we then continue with the presentation? I'm Lindelwa Dunjwa. I'm the chair of a portfolio committee on health. Next to me is Ms. Majalamba, who's the secretary of the committee. At my extreme left is Lindo Kuhle, who's the content advisor. At the back, right at the back, is Mbali, who's the committee assistant. I'll then allow members to introduce themselves, and after that, it will be the FFCC. How you do it, we are not going to be prescriptive. Thank you.
Dumelang kaofela. Nna ke ntate ngaka maisela wa ga maisela, ke a le medisa kaofela, ke leloko la komiti ya tsa bophelo mo palamenteng, ke a leboga.
Good morning everyone, my name is Nonhlanhla Ncube Ndaba, I'm a member of this portfolio committee.
Good morning Dumela, my name is Patricia Kopani, I'm a member of this portfolio committee, thank you.
Good morning to you. My name is Lindy Wilson. I am a member of the Health Portfolio.
Over to you.
apologies. Good morning, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members. My name is Daniel Plakis. I'm the Chairperson of the Finance and Fiscal Commission.
Good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Eddie Rakave. I'm a researcher at the Financial Fiscal Commission.
Honourable Members, good morning. My name is Chen, and I'm a research specialist of the FFC.
Morning, Chair, Members, Officials. Henry Eckstein, Parliamentary Liaison for the Finance Fiscal Commission. Thank you.
Good morning, Honourable Members, I'm Sihle Mkhize, Acting Chief Financial Officer, FFC.
Good morning, Meena Ashtiva, PNG.
Before we start, with those that are joining us on the left, we'll deal with that. Can we allow the member that has just joined us to introduce herself?
Good morning. My name is Rachel Adams, member of the committee.
Thank you, Honourable Members. We have got a couple of apologies. One, Honourable Mahlalela is out of the country. Honourable Mapanga is on oversight with agriculture. Honourable Nkonzo has got a family challenge. His child is not well. Honorable Thembe Kwayo has started at Science and Technology. Honorable Jaftaya, his brother, has passed on. So those are the apologies. We are not, I think it's important that I do again explain in a meeting that we are not going to take a decision. If we are five, we can continue with the meeting. I would appreciate if the members can relax. That is the situation. We will then hand over to FFC to welcome the office of the AG at an appropriate time. We will then introduce you. But can we then allow FFC to take us through? Thank you very much.
Again, thank you very much, Chairperson and honorable members. Thank you for the opportunity to brief you. I say from the outset that, like I've expressed to the Basic Education Portfolio Committee yesterday, we find it unfortunate that we get called to your meetings at the late in the day when it comes to the issues concerning health. And it's probably got to do with how the role of the FFC is understood. And I would like to raise with you for future engagements that part of our job is to look at social, economic, and fiscal policies as it affects the intergovernmental system, but moreover as it affects education, health and welfare, transport, and some of the other shared functions between national and provinces, but also between national provinces and municipalities. And I think there's a lot of things that we can share with you if you call us in at different moments of the work of the program of the Health Portfolio Committee, and not during the rush and the helter-skelter period of the BRRR, because that is rather late in the day for us, because we do annually, we are required by the Constitution to table to Parliament the recommendations on the division of revenue. And those division of revenue then sets to Parliament what you must expect from the national government, from the executive, in relation to the financing, fiscal policy arrangements, fiscal instruments, but also which policies needs to be financed over the years. And part of that is also our assessment of what is going on within health financing, what is happening in terms of the program and services with concerning health. So we're not only dealing with, our job in fact is not to deal with specific budgets, because like I confirmed in the others, because one needs to be consistent on it. And analyzing the budget is the easy part, and that's why you have a parliamentary budget office. They're responsible for that. And that's their job. Our job is to look at the legislation that appears in front of you. What does that mean? The programs that the departments bring to you, what does it mean relative to the rest of the other programs within the health sector? So we look at the collateral effect of legislation, policy, and programs as it relates to health financing and fiscal policies around health. For the next year, post-presidential summit, we will start looking at what the National Health Insurance Scheme means and how it's going to change the system. And the impact that will have on the intergovernmental system. So that's part of our work that we do. We're very interested to talk to this committee, because this is the second biggest budget that sits in provinces of service delivery, of the education. And it's quite important that we need to find ways to help the committee be able to determine the financing issues, the fiscal issues, the impact on the economy, and even just the human capital development index of our people, of our citizens, and especially our children. So by saying that, I'm suggesting to you, the Honourable Chairperson, and Honourable Members, that it is actually better if you call us not for BRRR, because we could have told you many things before that, and then you're actually ready for the BRRR when others engage with you. And it would be quite useful if you can help us with that, because it is our, when you ask questions as this committee, and we're watching on TV, and sometimes I'm a Henry City, we like to say, but why didn't they call us? Because there's information that we have around the fiscus, around the spending patterns, on the impact of that, on what's happening in provinces and what's happening in national, which we can actually help you with, because part of our job is to give you unfettered information and advice, but also to give you the cold facts. So to help, and that's the role of the FFC, is to help Parliament. We're advising only Parliament, and we're the only constitutional structure. The only constitutional structure that's responsible for economic, social, and fiscal policies in every single area of the country, of our country. Obviously, we don't venture into the defence and the others, but it's got to do with what the shared functions in particular. So, Chair, saying that, hopefully we will have greater interaction going forward with you, as honourable members. Almost said with you guys, with you as honourable members. Our presentation for today, we would look in terms of the questions that you asked. We look at the health outcomes. We'll give you a sense of the provincial and national budget analysis. And as I said, that the attraction to an analysis of this nature, it doesn't go deeper than what we ought to be going, because of the way we. Because if you do a budget analysis, you need to go to standard item expenditures, and you dig deeper and see exactly where it happens. At the programmatic level, it obscures in-depth understanding, in-depth thinking about it. But also it obscures basically to help you to see exactly what are the things that you can actually ask from departments, as opposed to these program and sub-program level, and it doesn't get into the detail of it. A bit as it may, we can definitely come back to you, or definitely give you further inputs into it. We will look at the consolidated health budget, the provincial budget analysis, look at the budget oversight issues, and look at the conditional grants and the performance of those conditional grants. But linked to that is obviously, why do we have conditional grants? Because conditional grants are not just there to augment health spending. The conditional grants are put in place to deal with the spillovers of services that's delivered in one province, which people goes to for another province. So that's why, into another province, that's why we talk about the spillover effect of it. And conditional grants is in many ways trying to manage that. And because of that, it becomes a national policy imperative for national governments to have conditional grants. There is a misunderstanding at times about what conditional grants are and what the purpose of it is. But it's ostensibly conditional grants to drive national policies. So those are the conditional grants that we'll talk about. And this is a point that I thought one needs to share with you, Honourable Chairperson, is that, and members, is that this also seems to be a misunderstanding on what the equitable share allocation is. You'll hear many a times provinces and departments coming to you to complain about the equitable share allocation. But the equitable share component of health within the equitable share allocation is definitely not a proxy for the budget. If it was a proxy for the budget, then we should not have provincial governments, because the constitution is quite clear what the role and responsibilities are of provincial governments, and they are responsible for determining after the block grant allocation how those funds get spent. And there seems to be confusion about that, and at times parliamentary committees get lobbied in the wrong way about that. And the reason why I'm mentioning it, we attend the different committees like yourselves, where there's a component issue of within equitable share, and people think that is the budget. It is actually not the budget. It's just an indicative indication of the pressures of potential services that needs to be delivered in a particular province at the national or provincial level. Chair, then before I go, I just thought it's important that part of the things that needs to be dealt with in the health sector is that clearly there are five problems that stand out in the health sector, which needs to be looked at as a matter of urgency going forward. The one of it is the issue around human capital management, recruitment and appointment of the appropriate, qualified, requisite staff with the capabilities to be able to deliver health services. You've probably heard the story before from different people within health, but also from the health minister, on attracting the appropriate health professional, medical staff in particular, to deliver the appropriate health services. It's a challenge. And also a link to that is the management of health services. There's a story with the Minister of Health told me two months ago that it is a problem that you can't have somebody with an education, a schooling qualification running a health department in one province. It's just not on. You need to have somebody who has a full understanding, a comprehensive understanding of the internal dynamics, the service delivery, the financing, hospital services, clinic services, community health services, and staffing questions around how to be able to help, around how to within the province. And similarly, that needs to cascade down to health facilities, whether it's a hospital or a clinic or community health center. So there is a worrying issue around that. The second part to that is the struggle to get the appropriate, capable staffing over time to be able to provide adequate support services to health services. Admin staff should be less than medical staff, proportionately speaking. But it's also those capabilities that's required. So that's the first thought that I thought I needed to raise with you. The second is clearly the issue of maintenance of infrastructure is a problem. That has got two elements to it. The one is the element of buildings and infrastructure. Where an appropriate buildings that can withstand the changing weather patterns in South Africa, but also are able to be considered as decent places where our poor people can go to for adequate, appropriate health services. It's an important matter. And those facilities are close by to people for traveling, and in the radius as determined by the standards by the health department. The second part of the maintenance is the issue of technology, medical technology and medical equipment. It's not helping to invest in expensive imported medical equipment and then it can't be maintained. Which then has the element of how do we then create the necessary capabilities within, recruit capabilities within hospital to be able to do the maintenance of it, that medical equipment and the technology that's available. So there's a need for making sure when we buy the equipment, we have people to maintain it. We have people to service it. We have people to know how to put the parts together. You know, it's like a Mercedes-Benz or some of these expensive cars that we have people drive that we, if it breaks down, the technology must be there. So the same goes for medical equipment. So that's the second issue, which I thought it's critical. It's, you have to set the context. The third issue is the issue on supply chain and supply chain management and procurement. And there's clearly supply chain and management of that can happen in the province at a provincial level. That deals with running of the mill in terms of the administration and support of health services. But there are others where there's issues around the economies of scale, the issues around the purchasing power, and pulling that together. And I know the office of the chief procurement tried to do this, and I don't know how far they are, but I think it's worth raising the matter again here in this meeting for consideration to further dig in for this, for your honourable members and committee chairperson is. Buying pharmaceutical drugs is an expensive thing. Whereas generics to specifics, it's quite expensive, and given the common universal health patterns and disease patterns within South Africa, it is conceivable that there are certain health drugs required which there could be a pooling effect where the at some point an institution or agency be allowed to buy drugs for the rest of the country and other pharmaceutical products. And it's critical that we think about that because there's a saving element to it. And clearly that is a procurement matter which provides purchasing power on goods and services. Because health service, the health inputs to make sure that our citizens are healthy and capable and able to productively participate in social, economic and political matters in the country is critical. You know, if we're able to make sure that there's proper supply chain processes around and a single point at times, then you won't have hospitals running out of it. Clearly there needs to be a pipeline of it, how we do it. But you can't have people going to a hospital and find there's no drugs there. The fourth thing that I thought is important to raise is the health financing. There is a problem with health financing in the country and how it's been utilized, and it clearly speaks to the role of provinces and how provinces does it relative to national. It's a concurrent issue, the concurrency nature of it. So we in many ways pay for our democracy since 1994 in different ways. In some places it goes sweet, in some other places it's a bitter pill to swallow. That at times when health, the claim that you normally hear is health is underfinanced, like education will say it's underfunded. Everybody says that. But here's the issue. You cannot say that you're underfunded if you haven't costed and priced health service delivery. So if anybody, my point is that I would like to raise with you on behalf of FSC. If any institution comes to you to say that we're underfunded, then the most classical question to ask them, have you costed your services? Have you priced it? Have you priced to deliver services to a certain community? Have you priced the disease pattern in terms of responding to the disease patterns in terms of health service inputs? Which is quite a detailed exercise. And that's part of one of our things that we know that we will never say to you in uncertain terms that health is underfunded, because we need to know first what's the standard of measure of financing health. And with that, it has to do with the costing and pricing of it. And then the last point, which I thought is important, is the issue of governance, leadership, and management. Governance, leadership, and management, and that speaks to the nature and extent of how the leadership looks at health services. And in this instance, I'm not referring to the political leadership, because there's a confusion sometimes when we talk about it. Health is governed at the provincial level in a particular way, and there's a leadership that drives either the changes of health or solidifies the current practices, or does certain things with the management which is sometimes not to the benefit of health services and the health system as a whole, but also not to the benefit of the citizens within those provinces. Classic. We, for the sins of having subnational governments and provinces around the concurrent functions, there hasn't been a period in the cycle since the President Mandela days to date that we haven't had 600 intervention by national government, where national government used the constitution to intervene in the province and take over the administration. And that speaks to how the Northwest problem for now is one of it. There's been others over the years. And that speaks to the nature of governance and leadership and management of the health services within those provinces. And I think these are the type of conversations that we actually wanted to, that we would like to have with you going forward as the committee, so that we can give you further detail to it as to how we got to certain things and why we're saying certain things in a particular way, and to demonstrate it through the information that we have. So that's critical for us, for yourselves, Honourable Chairperson, to be aware of to add on to your awareness of these matters. And a classic is that we have issues around the escalation in prices after you have a contract and a contract signed. It's indicative that something has happened around the leadership of contracting. Leadership of pricing of these things, because the escalation in prices suggests that somebody didn't understand what market forces meant and how you actually can cap percentage increase on these contracts that you have, and how many a times we are led by our noses by private entrepreneurs, to use that phrase, that do things not necessarily in the interest of the public, but in the interest of their own surpluses, profits and that. And we need to have people that understand the costing and pricing of the service, but also how to do contracting. And contracting is a legal responsibility based on also the social inputs that people make, and then there's the consequence of contract management. Chair, then I'm going to speak on the issue of the role and the function of the FFC, because that is the reason why you called us here, based on those constitutional responsibilities. On the national health outcomes, we have the view that the rollout of the ARVs over an extended period, and the consequently dealing with the prevention of mother-to-child transmissions and the introduction of new child vaccines has indeed improved health outcomes for South African citizens. If you look at the targets that the the government has set for itself is that life expectancy at birth, the target was 70 years, that we lived to 70 years. We've 62.9%. Let me hasten to say the 62.9% in upper is actually females and upper men. Men used to be lower than that. So I don't want to, women in South Africa lives longer than men. This was very good. So that was the baseline, 62.9% in terms of years. 2015 we reached 63.3 and 2016 63.8. When it comes to under 5 mortality rate, we experience the target was 33 under 5 year old death per 1,000. At 2014 we had the 440 per 1,000. We've gone down to 37. We're now standing at 34. So we're doing fairly well. I mean, we can put up the numbers before that, before the spirit was far higher. An infant mortality rate per 1,000 births, live births, less than 20 deaths per 1,000 live births. 2014, the baseline was 28. We've moved from there to 25 and 26 in 2016. The newborn mortality rate, 28 days per 1,000 live births. The target that was set by national government is 8. The baseline was 12. We're still at 12 in 2016. So we definitely need to push down on that one. On the next slide, the burden of non-communicable diseases. Our view, and based on the information that we're getting from the Medical Research Council, is that the death rate has surpassed those related to HIV and AIDS and TB since 2009. The strategic plan for the new for prevention and control of non-communicable diseases sets out targets for reducing the diseases. And there's obviously progress on the monitoring, which we think is poor because of the need of ensuring this reliable information. But the targets are increased treatment for mental disorder at 30%, increased treatment for hypertension and diabetes at 30%, reduce tobacco use at 20%, and reduce per capita alcohol use at 20%. Just go to the next slide, please. The next one. So, Chair, I'm going to give over to Eddie Rakabe to do the presentation further. And I'm also asking, Chairperson, that in case you're not finished with us, that I be released at least by 10:45, so I can get to the Appropriations Committee, because we're presenting the submission and the division of revenue. I need 15 minutes because I'm past the age of 50 to get to the other side.
Thanks, Jefferson. I'll take you through the last remaining slides, which mainly speaks to the provincial budget and national budget analysis. So I think in this slide, what we're just showing here is that the health spending, national health spending, has been sustained at almost at about 13.6% of national total spending over the years, and 3.8% of total GDP. So even though the budget has not been growing as much as it used to be, but we see that at least the budget, I mean the health budget was actually protected. In 2017-18, the total budget amounted to about 191 billion, of which 3% is allocated to the national department when you exclude the conditional grants, and the rest is mainly allocated to provinces and the agencies. The figure below just shows the spending patterns over time. Next slide, please. Yeah, I think the point that we're making here, despite the point that the FFC chair made about the issue of underfunding, I think what is very clear, and some of the when we have interactions with the department, is that the health budget remains significantly under pressure, notwithstanding the fact that we've been spending on average 13.6% of the budget allocation over time, and that the reason mainly is because we continue to experience an increasingly growing number of medically uninsured population, and even those who are actually who are insured, when they run out of their benefits, they run to the public health care facilities for the, and that obviously put pressure on the system. Extensive depreciation is also driving up costs with the medical equipment that we procuring from outside the country. When the rent depreciates, that has got implications for the health budget, and it puts quite a lot of pressure. And the last budget item which places pressure on the budget is the salaries, which increasingly we're starting to see that they're actually crowding out other important health outputs. So over time, we've seen that the COE bill of the health have been rising quite rapidly, especially in provinces like Limpopo. So that again needs to be obviously looked at. Now, just looking at the national department budget, is that when you look at the total budget, including conditional grants, it was allocated 42 billion rand in 2017-16, increasing from 38.5 billion rand. So the budget is somewhat responsive to a certain level, from growth of 38.5 billion to 42.6 billion. And what is actually very good here is that the department has achieved 99.5% spending performance in 2017-18. Although much of the spending obviously is attributed to conditional grants transfers. So, I mean, what could be a red flag there is just a small under expenditure under the program 2, which is responsible for NHI health planning and system, and obviously there are concerns that we are now almost in a stage where we're ready to implement the NHI, so you don't want to be seeing this kind of underspending within such program, even though the budget allocation to that program is not very big. Going to provincial health budgets, what we note in there is that the provinces account for a larger share of the national health budget, but salary spending or CEO spending constitute about 67.9% of total current of payments, declining from 68.6% in 2016. So what has happened over time is that with all these limitations on COE spending, you're gradually starting to see that COE is declining, but it's declining in relative terms because people who leave the system are not necessarily replaced. But when you look at COE in totality, it's still very high when you compare it with other departments. What is also good about the provincial budget in our view is that we've seen that non-negotiable budget line items such as your laboratory services and medicine show the highest budget growth. What is could be of concern is that when you look at the capital spending, it's actually very small, and that is what the point which the chairperson of the FFC was raising around infrastructure spending. Again, when you look at the provincial budget allocations across all the provinces, what you find is that Gauteng and KZN have the highest health allocation, and that essentially is a result of the province of the high allocation that the province receives through the provincial equitable share formula. Often we find often receive questions from other provinces why Gauteng and KZN, for instance, may have larger share of the of the health budget allocation, but that is essentially a decision that is taken at the provincial executive level to allocate the health function a little bit more resources. But again, when you look at the population dynamics within those provinces, it warrants for the province to for those two provinces to put out, to set aside a high level of spending in health. What is of concern is the Limpopo and Eastern Cape, as well as Free State, which have got a higher than average compensation of employee as a share of current expenditure. If you look at Limpopo, about 75% of their budget is spent on compensation of employees. And at the same time, you also find that the same provinces, when you look at their spending on capital assets, they spend the least on capital assets, which is about 3%. Now, here are some of the issues, the provincial budget oversight issues that we think the committee need to put on the radar. The first one, being that of the compensation of employees. So compensation controlling of COE expenditure should remain a key oversight focus area in the foreseeable future. And this is especially pertinent given that the current limitations on filling of posts and shortage of healthcare professionals. So we have a situation where we have got limitations on the appointment of healthcare professionals, but at the same time we've got shortages in the system. So now if we're placing all these limitations, but at the same time we're saying hospital managers are complaining about limited staff shortages. It means that there is a problem in the way we're managing the COE spending and actually its composition. And that's where much of the oversight focus needs to be, especially at the provincial level. Compensation of employees amounted to about 112 billion in 2017, increasing from 92 billion in 2015. That is actually a very steep rise. But what is interesting is that during the same period, personnel headcount declined from 309,000 to 302,000. So you almost have got an inconsistent growth pattern between personnel headcount and COE expenditure. And some of the reason underlying this would be the implementation of the occupational specific discipline OSD implementation. Some provinces, when the OSD was introduced, they had implementation problem, and as a result, that overshot their personnel spending, and that's why we have this discrepancy of increasing personnel headcount and declining personnel headcount and increasing COE expenditure. Now, and I think the point that we also need to make here is that the COE spend is likely to experience additional pressure arising from the minimum wage agreement that was recently signed, especially in relation to community health workers, and the absorption of the current cohort of doctor interns from the Cuban doctor program. So with all those two programs, we're more likely to see a growing pressure on COE expenditure, because now all the community health workers need to be paid at the minimum wage level. And then we also have about more or less 2,500 doctor interns who are still to come into the country from the Cuban doctor program, who must be absorbed by the different provinces. And if there is no budget if we don't manage the personnel budget quite well, it is it's likely that those doctor interns would end up not being absorbed, and we have a situation where people are sitting at home with qualifications, where yet the hospitals are in short of healthcare professionals. The other issue that I think we need to raise here is the issue of standardizing the community health care, the community health workers programs across all the provinces. There's been discrepancies in how the program is run across the different provinces. Even the stipend that is paid to some of the community health workers differs from one province to the other. So there is need for that standardization. And the minimum wage agreement, again, is one way of doing that standardization, but there's also operational aspects of the program that also needs to be standardized across all the provinces. The last issue is that the COE budget pressure from the doctor internship program must be also be weighed against the whole issue of doctor shortages, because now we have decided to halt that Cuban doctor program, and yet we still have these all challenges around availability of sufficient doctors, and again the issue of the province is not being unable to absorb. Those graduates and also nursing professionals. So it's not just the doctors who we're going to have a problem with, but there's also an issue of ability to absorb the nurses that we are funding through some of the provincial bursaries. So the control of COE spend must also be accompanied by efforts to balance the distribution of healthcare professionals within and across provinces. So if you look at where some of the provinces, I'll give you an example of Limpopo, it's got one of the highest COE expenditure relative to all other provinces. But when you look at the personnel composition within that province, especially when you look, let's take the specialist for instance, you will see that there's only one specialist per 100,000 people in that province, and yet it's got one of the highest expenditure on. But when you compare that with the professional nurses, it seems that there seems to be a focus on appointment of professional nurses rather than the specialist within that province. So there is the need to do the rebalancing of the composition of personnel within some of the provinces where COE expenditure is quite high. Now the other issue, which is actually becoming more common within the provincial health budget, is the whole issue of accruals and the legal claims. They remain a greatest risk to the provincial fiscal health. The accruals and medical legal claims amounted to 14 billion and 56 billion respectively in 2015, 2016 and 2017. And what we're seeing is that these legal claims are increasing exponentially in Eastern Cape, and also provinces that have established the medical legal units, such as the Western Cape and Mpumalanga and KZN. So you would have thought that after establishment of the medical legal units that manages these things, you would start seeing a decline in trust in medical legal claims, but that is not actually the case. I think the one issue that we need to point out was that in the last financial year, the FFC study, one of the studies that we did, found that while accrual in certain instances are actually justifiable. So if people walk into a hospital and find that certain drugs are not available, a hospital manager cannot say that we've run out of the budget, because the demand is there. They've got to make purchase orders even though the budget has run out, and as a result we end up having all these accruals, because then purchase orders are approved even though the budget has run out. So in certain instances it is the accruals are justifiable, but we had actually found that many of those accruals are actually a result of poor financial governance, as the chairperson has mentioned in his opening remarks. The other issue which is a bit of a concern, and that may require an oversight focus, is the the National Health Laboratory Services. So we've seen gradually, I mean, we've seen in certain instances that there has been disputes between the provinces and the National Health Laboratory Services on the payment of the invoices. And that is largely as a result of the absence of a health information system, which again the chairperson has spoken about. So there is a dispute between, the dispute arises as a result of the fact that doctors would require duplicate tests from the NHLS, and when the NHLS billed the provinces, the argument is that we cannot be billed for one patient twice. But that is essentially because there is no system to track some of these tests to ensure that patients do not, I mean, doctors do not order same test for the same patient. So there is a need to address operational inefficiencies between healthcare facilities and the LHS and National Health Laboratory Services to avoid the debt dispute. So because if you don't address this issue, there is the likely effect that you're going to put stress on the NHLS and end up collapsing, and then we don't have the laboratory services to do diagnosis that again may have serious implications for the healthcare system in its totality. Chairperson, I'll just move on to quickly to the last section that speaks to the health conditional grants. We've looked at about five conditional grants within the healthcare system, the health system, the health department. First one being the comprehensive HIV and AIDS grant. This grant was allocated 15.3 billion rand in 2017-18 and achieved 100% spending. So some of the achievements there is that we've been able to purchase to put 834,000 new patients on ARV and also maintaining about 3.8 million patients on the ARV program. 40 million HIV tests were conducted, and quite a number of female and male condoms were distributed. But the concern that we need to highlight is that the grant may likely be diluted by the introduction of the new HIV community outreach services component. And when you look at what that new grant is going to be doing, it's in essence to pay stipend for community healthcare workers. When actually the job of community healthcare workers is not necessarily to do HIV AIDS related work only, but it covers quite a comprehensive list of work. So the caution that we just making there is that if there are new priorities which requires new budget, we should not overreach into the existing conditional grants, because you may actually dilute the performance of some of the successful conditional grants going forward. The health facility revitalization grant achieved a spending performance of 97% from an allocated budget of 5.4 billion rand in 2017-18. The grant outputs for the 2017-18 financial year was that the provinces achieved a planning of 33 new facilities. They've equipped 33 facilities, construction of 33 facilities, and maintenance of other 31 facilities. Again, the chairperson has mentioned in his opening remarks about the need for emphasis on maintenance of some of these facilities, and also making sure that the newly constructed provinces make provision for operational budget for newly constructed facilities, so that we don't end up with new facilities that stay idle for a long time simply because there has not been any budget allocated for operations. So the Auditor General I highlighted concern regarding the availability of reliable data to verify some of the deliverables that are mentioned in this grant. So Essentially what this is saying is that we are not entirely sure that some of these deliverables which are reported by the provinces for this grant are correct or not, because the AG is saying the information that he audited, he could not conclusively say that the information is reliable. So there is a need to focus on that. The health professions training grant, I think, yeah, the expenditure was 100% from an allocation of 2.5 billion rand. The grant funded 285 postgraduate students, 413 graduates, and 327 clinical specialists. And the grant for this year will be going under review. I think what the issue that we really want to make is that during the review of this grant, consideration has got to be made to ensure that the grant consider financing, or even if it means continuation of some of the doctor training programs that has been placed, because now we have now halted the Cuban doctor training program. The National Treasury Services grant, again, that grant is also doing well, spending about 100%. But the National Treasury Services grant, there are not many issues there. The grant is spending very well. The only issue is there is that performance of the grant is often adversely affected by the by the lack of medical specialists. If you think about the Limpopo, where there is no sufficient specialist, so that's where you're most likely to find that the outputs of the performance output of the NTSG would be adversely affected. Lastly, the National Health Insurance grant. This grant it's really problematic because it has gone too many iterations since it was introduced in 2011. The grant is currently divided into five indirect subcomponents. I won't go into it. There seem to be quite good expenditure performance, except for the component that deals with health information system. And the point that we highlight in there is that continuous underspending of the NHI grant is worrying, given the imminent introduction of the NHI fund, and that constant iteration of this grant sometimes creates implementation uncertainties, and so that's why we struggle to find that there is a concerted good spending performance of the grant, because almost on an annual basis there is an iteration of the grant, a new component is added or removed, a new indirect component or direct component is added. So that creates, and what is also worrying is that the grant is also funding priorities which are unrelated to the actual implementation of the NHI. When you look at the human papilloma virus component, for instance, one wonder what is it that the human papilloma virus has got to do with the rollout of the NHI, because the grant is supposed to fund the implementation of the NHI. During the current the last financial year, as I mentioned, the FFC done a thorough study looking especially on the whole issue of accruals within the health the health sector, and we've made quite a few recommendations. The one being that the National Treasury should develop a framework or criteria for determining serious financial strain. This is essentially to deal with the whole issue of the claims of underfunding, because we've been receiving or hearing the departments increasingly claiming or arguing that the health sector is gravely underfunded. So there is a need to do that kind of costing, but also to ensure that there is a way through which objective way through which we are able to determine financial strain. The other recommendation relates to allocating part of some of the conditional grants, especially the infrastructure conditional grants, which are underspending, to set off the accruals within the department. The reason why we made the recommendation of using infrastructure conditional grant is essentially because during the economic slump, you don't want to be building new infrastructure, but instead you need to be focusing your efforts on maintaining existing infrastructure. And for the components of the budget that was set aside for construction of new infrastructure, we are recommending that that should be used to set off accrual so that the department can start on a clean slate going forward. And just to conclude, Chairperson and honourable members, the key concluding point is around the need to improve performance monitoring tools and system to ensure that especially ensuring that the health information system is rolled out nationally. So it's no reason for us to be setting performance targets if we cannot monitor whether we are meeting them or not. So there is a need to focus on that. Provincial the health departments must improve capacity for planning and managing COE, especially if compulsory, and I think it's spoken to this point. And spending on NHI grants should also be focused on activities that form the core of the health system for NHI delivery on the ground. And last, the other issue is the whole issue of encroaching on conditional grants by new unrelated priorities. The recommendation is that should be minimized going forward, because it's most likely to affect the overall health outcome. So if you think about what could likely happen with the improvement in some of our key health outcomes when we reduce spending on ARV, for instance, because we're now starting to use some of the comprehensive HIV grant allocation to deal with priorities which are unrelated to ARVs. That could potentially destabilize progress. And lastly, is that Parliament should focus its oversight efforts on underachieved performance targets where there has been 100% expenditure against the budget. So when you look at the annual report of the department, there is quite a lot of incidents where you find that there is 100% expenditure performance, but when you look at the output performance, it's not consistent with the target which has been set. Chairperson, with your permission, I would like to end here. Thanks.
No, thank you very much, Commissioner. I will then open the floor for members to ask questions. I'm just worried because some of the questions may be related to the input by the chair, and the chair is not here. I don't understand, because I felt a bit uncomfortable that you have to go to another committee when you've made a presentation here, and now hoping that you'll be able to respond to even some of those questions that may be directed, that may arise from the input of the chair. Honourable members, there is the presentation. Any questions? Honourable Wilson.
Thank you, and thank you for the presentation. I can't say thank you for the good presentation, because I think it's quite an alarming presentation, but that's not because of you, it's because of what you're actually reporting on here. And I think my biggest concern is, and I think you've mentioned it, I started to make questions from the beginning, and it came up quite regularly in your presentation after that. When we read something that the progress of, and we started with the NCD's outcomes, are due to the progress monitoring of NCD outcomes is due to lack of reliable information. And that's come up quite regularly, that you are not getting information. It became very obvious again when we got to outcomes on selected performance targets for the 17-18 years, where the difference between reporting and evidence, and an example was hospitals reaching 75% of core standards, which was 43 out of 43, but there's no supporting evidence. that creates a huge problem. The other one was infrastructure norms and standards exceeded target, but you were unable to confirm this because there was a lack of you could not confirm due to work scope. I think the fact that you're not getting reliable information is extremely alarming, and I think that makes our job exceptionally difficult because we are not getting accurate information. Because you're not getting accurate information, we can't get accurate information, so it makes it very difficult for us as a portfolio to actually monitor progress when information is unreliable. I'm not sure what needs to be done about this, but it is obviously a huge problem. Can you give us an idea of what you as the FFC are doing to assist yourselves, which will assist us? And I just wanted to have a briefing on the Cuba, your comment that the Cuba medical health program has been halted. We've just come back from Cuba. We arrived back yesterday. And that this has caused huge alarm in Cuba. I must just tell you, the Cuban government are terribly upset with us. But having said that, I was advised on Friday afternoon by one of the doctors there that in actual fact, Aaron Motsoaledi, the Minister of Health, has just re-signed the agreement with the Cuban government to continue with the program. I don't know if you can enlighten us as far as that is concerned. Thank you very much.
Any other questions? Okay. By the looks, there are no other questions. I just have some, it's just a carrot of, I don't know whether you'll be able to respond to that. If I understood the chair in terms of the issue of human resource, I hope I understood him correctly. There's the administration versus clinical, whether should we have less administrative staff versus clinical staff. I just want to get clarity on that. And secondly, is that, yes, I'm of the understanding that you are an independent organization. In that independence, not unless there's something that I'm ignorant of, I'll just say it, is that are there some issues which you find to be challenging, get clarity from the department to respond on, so that there is that a greater understanding before you come to a particular finding. Lastly, is that yes, it has been said it's quite for some time the challenge, the issues that are bedeviling the health sector, which is HR management, financial management, also and procurement infrastructure. I would have, and it's my own view. Is it not about time that as FFC, as you have rightfully identified those, like everybody, that come with a, should I say, an advice or a recommendation on how in moving forward as the sector we are then able to deal with that, those. The last one, compensation of employees outside Limpopo. Because Limpopo once reported to us why they have got a bloated structure. I would appreciate, it's a request that in the issue of compensation of employees, Yes, post people, the number of employees are down, but the compensation is up. Is it not because of the people that are employed? I will make an example. You'll have less staff, but you'll have staff that is employed to be at a particular level. Maybe a specialist, as much as the headcount is low, if I can just use that analogy, but the compensation is high because people that are coming in are employed are at a particular level. That is then making that inconsistency. And if my analogy is ill-informed or is ignorant, feel free to say to me that, because it may create an impression. That's why I would request that if you can give us that breakdown, that as much as they were 20, now they are 15, and you will expect that the compensation of employees is also to go down, but the compensation of employees goes up as much as they are less, they have resigned. So that's why the question for me is it not because those that maybe have remained or have been employed, they are at a level that takes the compensation of employees high? I hope you understand me. Those are the few questions from me. I don't know if there are any other questions from members. If they are not, I will allow you to respond. Honourable Wilson.
Sorry, Chair, I'm just trying to find the page where two of the, sorry, let me get them. The two of the years are exactly the same, and I'm not sure which one was which. They both said 2718. Your page 18. The provincial budget oversight issues towards the end of your report, when you're talking about the debt to the NHLS. Outstanding debt 2718, outstanding debt 1718. If you can just give me clarity which one is which, yeah. I think one's probably supposed to be 1617. Is the first one 1617, not 1718? 1617, thank you.
Okay.
Thanks, Chair. I will try my best to answer on behalf of the Chair, but if I can't, I will probably give him the question and then you will respond in writing to yourself. So the issue of no supporting evidence, I think to be fair to the department, so when you look at the how the audit, I'm sure the Auditor General operates, they can speak for themselves. But from what I understand is that in certain cases, when they do their performance audit, especially on some of these performance targets, relating to infrastructure outputs, for instance, they would have to go and actually do physical assessment of this outputs. And sometimes because of resources and other things, they are unable to actually go and do the physical assessment. And they end up saying, we don't have sufficient evidence because of the scope of the work scope does not allow them to go and do some of those physical. But there are also other areas where there is genuine concerns about the availability of reliable information. And coming back to the question of what needs to be done, is that the Auditor General needs to be complemented by the Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation on some of this performance assessment. So the manner in which the DPME has been doing performance assessment is somewhat piecemeal, because again, because of issues of scope, it's almost impossible to do a sector-wide evaluation and assessment of all deliverables within 1 year. So as a result, you do it in piecemeal. But it remains a concern, because then it means that there is no means for we by which we were able to verify whether the information. So we take this information that has been given as true, until at such point where perhaps the DPME or the AG would have a specific performance audit on some of these performance outcomes. So on the issue of the Cuban thing, I'm also not really aware, but it's something that we can follow up with. Chair, the question that you raised around the discrepancies in COE expenditure and personal headcount, there are many reasons causing this discrepancy, and one of them is what you have described as the imbalance between what we call the core staff and the non-core staff. So you find that the structure is top heavy in certain instances, where there is quite a lot of people at the top who are on higher salary bands and few people at the bottom with lower salary bands. But there's also, as I mentioned, there's also been this implementation of OSD. It has also caused that ballooning of the COE expenditure. Now, the FFC has done some work around managing health personnel within the health sector and the education sector. This study was done three years ago. We came here and made a presentation to the Standing Committee on Appropriations about the study. So again, it's a study that we can share with the committee, so that you can look at some of the recommendations that the commission has made around managing personnel within, and also acknowledging some of the challenges why there is those discrepancies. We interact with the department almost on a regular basis on a number of issues. So, but on certain issues, of course, the commission would maintain its independence around how we view information. I mean, despite the fact that we may have consulted with the department, there are certain things where we take a certain position that, despite the explanations that we may have received when we asked why certain things are how they are, we still maintain that that we still take that independent position where we say, in the absence of alternative information, we still convinced that the position that we have taken is correct, but we do consult with the department on a regular basis. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. I just want to check any more questions so that we... Honourable Kupan.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. Have you listened to the presentation, Chair, and the matters that were alluded by Daniel Blackies? I think it's the thing that we know, that the things that are happening every day. Chair, mine, I just wanted to find out if maybe he can share the information regarding your study, especially relating to the accruals. because we need to have such information, because the presentation is just on the PowerPoint, it's only sentences for you, so we don't have the muscles of the information. The other thing, Chair, that you just mentioned is, I just want to find out, based on what he was responding now, the relationship between the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation, the AGE's office and your office and the Commission. Is there any stage where you share the information or you sit in the table, around the table, because I think the objective is the same, to assist in terms of what is happening. Is there a situation like that? Because whatever that you are saying, the AGE now, after now, if you left, they will be telling us the same thing. So that's what matters. I just wanted to find out about the relationship. Thank you.
Okay.
Yes, I remember. The relationship is there. Only need to consult basis. For instance, when we come here, some of the information that we consult is from the Auditor General's report. But in certain instances, because of the specific request that the committee makes to us about what we must come and present here about, it's not always, we don't always find that the Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation have got that information, for instance. So we rely on different sources, from the AG to the Treasury to the Medical Research Council. So we put that kind of information together. But yes, the relationship is there. We do request the information. Some of the information that we use come directly from the AG and the Department of Performance Monitoring.
No, thank you. Thank you very much. We will, as we have been listening to the presentation, the AG is going to report, is going to make its presentation, the National Department of Health will make its presentation. We'll then have to refer in some of the issues that you have raised. There is something that the Chair has raised, which I would have thought that there's nothing that is preventing the FFC for saying, Chair, we want to come and to make a presentation when you are picking up something. I'm raising this because the Chair alluded to the fact that we are only inviting you towards when we are preparing for PRRR, whereas you are to come in between, which that is, I think it's fair. It's fair enough, we take that, but I would have thought that even within yourselves, there's nothing that is preventing you to then come and say, Chair, can we have a session with you? There are these issues that we want to reflect to the committee. So in moving forward, I will also suggest and propose to you that consider doing that. Thank you very much. Until we meet again, if there are any detailed information, we'll because we will need that, because some of the issues are a bit, they are bothering in being general, whereas if we can have a breakdown on some of the of those issues, so that I'm wrapping up now. I see your hand is up, Honorable Kopan. Do you want to ask something?
Richard, to interject, but something just came out to my mind here. According to him, to the presentation, they were saying that the performance of the National Treasury Service Grant is affected adversely by the lack of medical specialists. That's what you said, and equipment and reduction in the service at facilities. Something that I discovered in the province, the medical equipments are there, but they come from outside. As a result, they are not even being used, or the hospital can't even use them. So that is a problem. So is it vice of what is, did you manage to check whether it's a lack of specialist or we bought the things that we can't use them or what? If maybe you can clarify that, Chair. Because in Pilinomi, I remember there are about 8 ventilators that were bought three years back. They can't make use of them because they were faulty. They can't even use them. Bongani Hospital, they bought it about 10 theater tables. They can't put the theater tables together to make use of them. It's not because they're no specialist, but that is the situation. If maybe they can manage to clarify that, Chair.
Thanks. Yeah. Well, it's a combination of the two, and usually it really depends on whether the hospital is one of these tertiary hospitals or not, because the grant is mainly allocated to some of these bigger tertiary hospitals. So it may happen that in some of these bigger hospitals, the equipment is there, but there are no specialists to operate those equipments. In other cases, the specialists are there, but there are no equipment, because the equipment are funded through a different grant, and the National Health Tertiary Services does not fund the purchasing of equipment. So there is an issue of that realignment between the different conditional grants to ensure that when the health revitalization grant is allocated to a specific hospital for the purchase of certain equipment, there is also to ensure, on the other hand, to ensure that the National Tertiary Health Services or the Health Professions Training Grant provide sufficient support for the acquisition of a specialist who would be able to operate those equipment. So it is a combination.
No, thank you. Thank you very much. We'll send a request for some detailed information so that we, as members, we are then empowered in following up some of the issues. Thank you very much. As they are leaving, we will then invite the Office of the Auditor General, because it's going to be the next presentation. Thank you very much, the Office of the Auditor General. We will then do the normalities, the introduction, and then after that we'll allow you to make a presentation. But before that, honourable members, the Office of the AG has requested that we give you forms which are called stakeholder satisfactory questionnaire. You will see the questions that are it's a questionnaire that is to they want a feedback to all the stakeholders. So I thought it is important. It's the first time that we have that. So I thought it will be important that before they are circulated, I just explain to you so that as they are making a presentation, you will then start looking into this. So the secretariat will circulate this, and it's just a response from ourselves. In terms of the introduction, I'm Lindelwa Tunjwa. I'm the chair of the Portfolio Committee on Health. On my left is Lindo Kuhle Ngumane, who's our content advisor. Asanda Luaka, who's the researcher of the study group of the African National Congress. Moses, who's the researcher. At the back on the extreme right is Zubair. I don't know why he has decided to isolate himself. Only God knows. Ask him, don't ask me. And at the extreme at the back is Mbali, who is our committee assistant. And the lady is who's going to be next to me is Vukas Machalamba, who's the secretary to the portfolio committee. I will then hand over to members to introduce themselves.
Tumela, kinta demais ngakumai selawa mai se elkelogo la committee a chawo pelo mo parlamenti kialem.
Good morning. My name is Rachel Adams, member of the committee.
Good morning, Jumela. My name is Patricia Kopani. I'm a member of the portfolio committee. Thank you.
Good morning and welcome. My name is Lindy Wilson. I'm a member of the portfolio committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You will introduce yourselves. How you do it depends on you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and honourable members. My name is Maud Madondo. I'm from the Auditor General of South Africa IT Audit. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, honourable members. My name is Tabulum Sinyani from the Auditor General as well.
Good morning, Chairperson and honourable members. My name is Thembile Ngubane from the Auditor General.
Good morning, members. My honourable members, my name is Lewong Khato. I'm part of the team. Thank you.
Good morning, Chairperson and honourable members. I am Chiamo Hlajwayo. I'm also from the Office of the Auditor General.
Good morning, Mina Ashtiwa from PMG.
Good morning, honourable members. I'm also part of the Auditor General team. Thank you.
But who are you?
Apologies, it's Thembelani Vanqa.
And we are joined at the extreme back by the lady, she's called Bubbles. Noltando Lengesi, who is the secretary to the study group of the Afghanistan Congress. Thank you very much. Well, you are here to take us through some of the issues that you have raised, which are a concern. Fortunately, when the FFC was taking us through, you were also here. You are not in any competition, but you are to ensure and assist us in understanding the balance and the issues that have been raised. I will then hand over to whoever is then going to lead in terms of the presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Before we start, would like to thank the Honourable Members of the Committee for allowing us this opportunity to then come and brief the Committee on the audit outcomes of the health portfolio as well as highlights of the health sector. In our presentation, I will be doing most of the presentation. However, when it comes to the IT section, I'll then hand over to our IT auditor to assist us. And then when it comes to the highlights of the health sector, I will hand over to my colleague to assist us. So if we start with the presentation, Chairperson, I would also would like to submit an apology from our business executive. He's still stuck in the Portfolio Committee of Environmental Affairs. So hopefully, somewhere in the meeting, he will be able to come in. Thank you. As part of our presentation, we always start our presentation with the reputation promise because this is what, as an organization, we promise. And I would like to highlight the fact that we exist to strengthen our country's democracy by enabling oversight. And this presentation is part of that process of enabling oversight to the committee. And this slide then ties into the next slide, which is our role in this process. Our role in this process where our aim today is to reflect on the audit work that we've performed in the portfolio as well as highlights of the health sector so that we can assist the committee in the role of assessing the performance of the health portfolio. Moving on to the next slide, which then highlights our focus. As part of the Public Audit Act, we look at three audit areas. We look at three audit areas, which is the financial statements, where we express an opinion on the fair presentation and absence of significant material, significant misstatements in the financial statement. We also look at the annual performance report and the annual performance plan, where we then indicate if there are any material findings that have been noted. We then also look at the key legislation, where we look at the compliance with those legislation, government financial matters. So when you look at our audit reports, it's actually divided in those three areas. There's an opinion on financial statements, and there's material findings on performance information, and then there's material findings on compliance where applicable. The next slide is to just remind the committees of the different types of audit opinions we issue as an organization, where on the far left, where there's a green, is unqualified opinion with no findings. And in this category, it's when there was no material misstatements identified in the financial statements, there was no material findings in performance information as well as in compliance. The next block being the financially unqualified with findings, where there may be not material findings on financial statements. However, we might have noted material misstatements on AOPO as well as compliance. The next opinion is the qualified opinion, where we find that there's some areas in the financial statements where we believe we're financially or materially misstated. The last two opinions, which we usually don't prefer and we hope that the entities don't have, is the adverse opinion, where it's more areas. So it's not just maybe one or two areas, it's more areas in the financial statements where there were materially misstatements. And in the disclaimer, it's when the challenges were so much that we couldn't even express an opinion. Moving to the next slide, this slide is just sets the tick marks of the legends throughout the presentation. So on the left shows the colors, which are the green, the orange and the purple, then when we look, when we see those colors, when it comes to the outcomes, this is what we then explain to say is unqualified opinion with no findings. At the bottom part of the slide is when we use the legends to say if we see the green round going up, means there was an improvement. And on our right, we then defined the entities that have been included in this presentation. We will then move over to the slide on accountability. And if the committee remembers, in the prior year when we were tabling a similar audit findings, we kept saying that the theme for the 17-18 for the AGS is accountability. So throughout this year, this is what the theme that we were looking at, and we were also reporting on it. And in this theme, we're saying accountability, where there's the planning, the doing, the checking, and the acting, we are more likely to have better audit results. So in the planning, we are saying if the portfolio or the department, the entities, they understand the environment, they align their targets to the MTSF, and the people that are responsible for implementing the target understand the plan, we are more likely to get a better outcome. And that's if when they were planning, they defined the target specifically to align to the MTSF. So in the doing, we are saying they need to set up processes that will assist them in achieving the targets that have been set in the plan category. And these processes include systems, policies and procedures, and internal controls to make sure that they achieve the targets that they've set for themselves. And with the checking, we are saying that there needs to be monitoring by all assurance providers, where the monitoring by the internal assurance providers like the senior management, the accounting officer, needs to be more frequent, where also the external service providers can be on a quarterly basis. The fifth block indicates the act, which is the consequence management. So for accountability to be effective, whenever there is any transgression by the officials, the department needs to be able to hold them accountable and act on those transgressions. So in this accountability, we're saying if they plan correctly, they implement the basis, there is assurance providers checking, and where there is any transgressions, action is taken place. This has a possibility of then getting a better audit outcomes, which most likely can get to the impact of better lives for the citizen. I think we'd want to also include a disclaimer that it's not necessarily that every time when there's a clean audit opinion, there's service delivery. However, we have seen that when there's a culture of doing things correctly, usually there's an impact on service delivery. The next slide is then sets the tone of the rest of the presentation on the audit outcomes. So based on the wheel that I just presented previously, this is then when we then assess in the portfolio under the plan, do, check, and act. So when you look at the plan, we haven't really seen much changes from the previous results that were presented to the committee. I would want to highlight the do. We have seen a regression in the do, because in the portfolio we have seen two audits regressing from their clean audit status. So there was internal controls that didn't work properly in the previous year, and we're also highlighting the ICT controls that remain unchanged. And the unchanged is red because we've been highlighting that the ICT control, especially in the National Department of Health, is red. So we gave them a red because there hasn't been any movement with the ICT controls. When you look at the assurance, because of then the issues we identify under the do, then the senior management accounting officers, then assurance is regressed. So we are saying the monitoring in the senior management and accounting officers were not adequate enough to prevent the issues that we identify under the do. In the act, we are highlighting that there is unchanged, where we've noted that there are investigations, but most investigations for transactions takes too long. And some of them, to date, we are not aware of the outcome. Our next slide then takes us to the snapshot of the health portfolio for 17-18. As indicated in the previous slide, we were looking at the six audits that form part of the health portfolio. So we are showing, under clean audits, we are showing a regression, because in the current year, there's only one audit that received a clean audit in the portfolio, whereas previously there were two. And then in the quality of financial statements, it's stagnant because there's two that actually do not have material findings on financial statements. On the performance report, there's three entities, and it's also stagnant. And with the compliance with legislation, it's also a regression because of the regression of the two entities that regress. Irregular expenditure is seen as an increase due to the fact that the 17-18 irregular expenditure decreased. However, when you look at the lump sum over the years, irregular expenditure actually increased. Moving to the next slide on audit outcomes. So the theme in the current year, we try to then show the 5 years of the portfolio to give the committee a better picture of what happened over the past 5 years. So when we look at the audit outcomes of the portfolio in the past 5 years, there's been some form of, there was an improvement and then there's a regression. So when we look at MRC, like I highlighted earlier, for example, MRC and CMS, in the current year, they regressed. So MRC has been clean for a number of years. However, in the current year, they have regressed, and this was due to the fact that they had non-compliance with regards to procurement process, which specifically was with local content. CMS as well was clean for 2 years, and the current year, they regressed, also due to procurement processes with regards to the procurement of consultants. And that compliance also then resulted in material, in the financial statements being material misstatements. However, they adjusted them. That's why they then received an unqualified audit opinion. The NHLS has then regressed from the prior, and in the current year it's still stagnant with the qualification. I would also want to highlight the fact that with the National Department of Health, we've noted that for the past 5 years, they have been stagnant receiving the unqualified findings, and we look at the issues affecting them, especially with compliance. The finding that they have is mainly on material adjustment to the financial statements, and with OPO, there's specific indicators that they're struggling with. In the next slide, we then give, it's like a breakdown with regards to compliance legislation. It's what I've highlighted earlier, where the OHSC, we commend them because they were clean the current year, and I think the more work to be done is for them to maintain the clean audit outcome, because as we've seen, the other entities that were clean actually regressed. So with NHLS, they had a number of findings on procurement processes that we've been identified. With NDUH, like I indicated earlier, the findings that they have, they just have a finding on the non-compliance of the fact that the financial statements they submitted were not free of material misstatements. So the audit identified specific misstatements, specifically on commitments and tangible immovable assets, where they then made adjustments, and that's why they landed with an unqualified audit opinion. When we then look at the annual performance report, MRC and the OHSC did not have material findings on the annual performance report. With CMS, they had a material finding on one indicator, which in the prior year they were fine, and with NDOH, they have material findings on indicators specifically relating to the labs and infrastructure. So we've noticed that those are the two indicators that the department is struggling with. Also through my two presentations, we've indicated that CCODs are standing, even though in the 13-14 there's been an audit opinion, but when you look at the time of happening, CCOD has been outstanding. However, I think we would like to highlight the fact that there has been progress in the CCOD. We are currently with the 2014-15, busy with the 2014-15 audit, so CCOD is catching up. The next slide is on the status of record review. So in our previous engagements, we have presented this slide. So as at year end, the status of records of the National Department of Health has not changed, where we are seeing areas of concerns in oversight monitoring, financial management, procurement, performance management, procurement and contract management, and compliance management. So with the financial management is what I've indicated earlier, where they had material misstatements on commitments and tangible immovable assets, and that's why they are yellow. With performance management is program 5 had material misstatements on the indicators, which is the labs and the infrastructure, which I indicated earlier. Compliance is what I indicated earlier with material amendments. I would want to also highlight the IT management, because even in my previous engagements, IT management has been remaining a red. However, there's a specific slide that deals with the issues that resulted into IT management being a red. Moving on to the next section of the presentation, we look at the quality of the APPIM, the analysis of expenditure per program, and the performance achievement. So most part of this slide is more for information purposes. So we analyzed the annual performance report of the department, and with the six programs, we are noticing the fact that the percentage spending is above 95% or 90%. However, the percentage of targets that we achieved is very low. Specifically with Program 5, where we highlight the fact that there was 99% spending, and however, the targets that we achieved were only 9, which results to 31%. So overall, the department spent 99% of the budget and on average achieved 64% of their targets. So in the next slide, we are highlighting the two programs that we selected for audit in the current financial year, which was Program 2 and Program 5, and there were no material findings on Program 2. However, there were material findings on usefulness and reliability in Program 5, and this relates to the indicators I highlighted earlier, which is indicators relating to the labs and also indicators relating to infrastructure. In the next slide that we have, previously when we engaged the committee, we indicated that as part of our value add procedures and organization, we have selected two key projects that will then track over the useful on the life cycle. So the project is Dihlabeng Hospital and Siloam Hospital. So in the current financial year, there was no much movement on Dihlabeng, so we didn't focus on it. However, we looked at the Siloam Hospital. I would also would want to highlight to the committee that this project was then done by our experts, which is the infrastructure unit, because then they have engineers and quantity surveyors who are better positioned to assess the status of the project itself. So their scope, they were looking at project planning and project management. So in the middle block, they've highlighted the risks that they've identified. So some of these risks have not necessarily materialized. However, they were giving a heads up to the department that if we don't fix certain areas, possibly that the project, the Siloam Hospital project, will either overspend or will then not be completed on time. So, for example, one of the risks they highlighted is that in their bill of quantity, there were specific activities that were not included, which are the removal of utilities. And then also with the last one is the redesign cost. What happened with this project is initially the hospital was designed to build to be about 350 beds. However, with the gate review process, they then advised that it's not feasible to build a bed, 350 bed hospital. So what happened is by the time the gate review happened, they had already designed the footprint of the hospital. So with this new information, they are forced then to go back and redesign. So we are highlighting to them that at the point of redesign, there's a possible footless and wasteful expenditure that they are going to incur. There is also a risk on overpayment, and unfortunately with this one, it's actually materialized. If you look at the findings on the right, where there was duplicate payments that was identified on one of the invoices paid to the service provider, and it resulted in fruitless and wasteful expenditure. However, management has indicated that in the next invoice, because the project is still running, they will be able to issue a credit note. And some of the findings we raised is, since the project is over long term and they were looking at the whole project, so some of the invoices they were looking for in the previous years, they were struggling to get them, and also they had a problem with, there was a program, the service provides both a program and a project manager, so they were struggling to separate the cost of those roles. Moving on to the next slide. This is the slide on irregular expenditure as well as IT. So when we look at irregular expenditure over the 5 years, we have seen there was an increase, a decrease, and an increase, and a decrease again. And this is due to mainly the NHLS. In the prior audit, there was a huge amount, 990 million, that was identified in the NHLS due to the fact that there were certain contracts that were entered into without the appropriate board approval. So all the contracts that were signed off, all the expenditure paid on those contracts are then irregular expenditure. And we've realized also in the current year, since these contracts are over a number of years, as long as they keep paying, making payment on that contract, we'll have irregular expenditure. And then we also noticed an increase in the regular expenditure on the National Department of Health, and this was due to specific transactions with the non-profit organizations that were classified as transfer payments, and we are saying they actually should have gone through a procurement process. With regards to the Council for Medical Schemes, we also indicate an increase in the irregular expenditure, and this was due to the procurement process not followed when they are appointing the consultants, which are the labor-related costs and for inspection. And when we look at the fire end with the audit report, in the MHLS audit report, the irregular expenditure was qualified, whereas with the NGOH, we included a compliance paragraph on not taking effective steps to prevent irregular expenditure. The next slide highlights the top three non-compliance areas, which is three written quotations not invited, which was for NHLS and Council for Medical Schemes, local content minimum thresholds not adhered to, which was for the MRC and the NHLS, and competitive bidding not invited, which was for NHLS and CMS. So in the current year, in the portfolio, there's a total of 693 million irregular expenditure that they have disclosed. 2% of that irregular expenditure is irregular expenditure that incurred in the previous year but was only identified in the current year, and about 17% of that expenditure is through contracts that were entered into in the prior years. So as long as they keep paying on those contracts, there will be irregular expenditure. So the balance there, which is 81% of that irregular expenditure, is due to contracts or procurement processes that were not followed in the current year. The bottom of the slide shows a regression in the CM compliance, like I violated earlier, which is the NHLS, the CMS, and the MRC. The next slide then refers to the findings on information technology, and I will then hand over to my colleague to take you through the slide.
Thank you, Chairperson, and honorable members. What we have on the slide, those are high-level findings. So before I can go through those high-level IT findings, I need to first explain that from our side, we look at the systems that are being used. So in this case, are the systems that are used by National Department of Health. In the current year, we cover the financial systems, which is BEST, HESAL, and LOGIS. And we also covered your performance systems, the TB systems, which is ETR and EDR, HIV system, TR.net. We also look at LIMS, your lab information management system, for the first time this year, and also project management information system for the first time this year. And we also covered web DHIS. So what we do, we look at how are the systems secured? If you need to use the system, do you need to have a password? Are the security updates updated on a regular basis? Do we have antivirus software to make sure that you don't have viruses coming into the computers? The other thing that we look at is that only authorized users can access the systems. The other thing that we normally look at is the data that's sitting on the system, are these backed up so that the data can be available when it is required. We also look at when there are changes that need to be made on the system, are those changes authorized? And lastly, because of the systems that are used, they are mainly from the service providers. Are the service level agreements monitored, or do we have service level agreements? What has been identified at National Department of Health is IT is not centralized as such. We have core IT, which is responsible for the transversal system, your BEST, PESAL, and LOGIS, and the Active Directory. Then we have IT sitting at the different directorate, if I may put it that way. Like you'll have your TB, they're using the ETR and EDR, and they are not supported by core IT. and also TIA.net, LIMS, and all other systems. The only ones that are sitting at core is BES, PESAL, and LOGIS. And the other thing is when you go to this directorate, they have limited IT knowledge, which becomes very difficult for them to ensure that there are adequate controls across the systems that they are using. So what has been happening is you see on the findings that has been identified, these findings are identified across all directorates that are using these systems that are not under core IT. Okay, so we had findings that were there for the past 4 or 5 years, especially ETR, EDR, and TIA.net. However, towards the end of the financial year, some of the findings were cleared, so there was a small movement. However, because we added new systems to be audited in the current year, LIMS and PMIS, we had new findings. Hence, we haven't moved from IT perspective, we are still red. Okay. So if you can move on to the findings that are sitting there. From National Department of Health, the IT governance framework that they have did not address all key aspects. There is the IT governance framework that was developed by DPSA, I think, around 2012. So what has happened is Department of Health adopted that. However, there was not much, they did not make it suit the National Department of Health. Okay. So what was missing there is it did not include risk and mitigation factors in the IT governance framework. The IT governance framework that they developed did not touch on business continuity and disaster recovery plan. It also did not talk to IT compliance. Then number two, the business continuity policy approval was inadequate. It did not include key contacts, because if something happens within the National Department of Health, you need to know who to contact to say there is a disaster now. The other thing that was not included in the business continuity plan was the recovery time frames, the accessible recovery time frames. The other things that were not noted on the business continuity plan were the key systems for National Department of Health. Then on number three, we have service level agreements. So what has been identified is National Department of Health is using different service providers to support them when it comes to IT, but there were no service level agreements in place, and hence the service that they were receiving was not monitored. And then on the firewall, the policy that was supposed to monitor the use of the firewall, monitoring the incoming and outgoing network traffic, was not approved. Then we have the inadequate network and application monitoring tool to effectively monitor and report on uptime and downtime. We have these different systems, but there was nothing in place to monitor when were the downtime to make sure that there are plans in place to avoid downtime going forward. Then the other thing is the change management policy was not reviewed due to the lack of implementation and adequate implementation on e-directory. I think I've covered that to say what has been happening is you just have the systems, but the controls around the systems are not there. So what has been happening when you look for the change management to find out if there is a new change that needs to be implemented, what are the processes in place to make sure that only authorized changes are implemented, that will not be found. IT security management controls were inadequately because of policy was not reviewed. Inadequate patch management processes in the change control policy. Again, when we talk to IT security management controls, we're looking at the passwords, as I've mentioned before. We're looking at the security update here referred to as patch management. So what has been happening there is the security management controls that were implemented National Department of Health was inadequate. And lastly, it's the backup policy that was inadequate. This was coming through almost across all systems that were used at National Department of Health. And in one of the systems, which is your LIMS, because of them not having the backup policy and not backing up their data and taking the data off-site, it was identified at one of the labs, I think in Western Cape, where my colleagues could not audit that part because the system crashed and there were no backups that were done. So the system was the data was basically not available. I think that's it from the IT side. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Moving to the next slide on resources, commitments and proposed recommendations, the root causes that we have identified is slow response to management, where we are saying with the findings that we have raised in the prior year, we've noted that at the NHLS and NDOH there are some action plans that are not being, where management is actually not taking action with the findings that we have raised. And at NHLS we've noted that there's instability or key vacant positions because we know that there's an acting CEO, an acting CFO, and also an acting head of internal audit. So we're saying because of these vacant key positions, this has resulted in the audit outcomes that we have discussed above. And then we've also identified the inadequate consequence for poor performance and transgressions. And that's what I highlighted in a previous slide, that there is investigations. However, we are not sure what the outcomes of the investigations are. We are not sure if there's any corrective actions that's taken against the transgressors. The last one we included, there is the key officials lacking appropriate competences. And this we identified specifically with the procurement process at the NHLS, the MRC and CMS when we engage the entities on the reasons why there is the non-compliance with the Treasury regulations. And we identified that the officials were actually, either they didn't understand the Treasury regulations or they were not aware of some prescripts of the Treasury regulations. When looking at the commitment, set of a commitment, the one in green is the CCOD, where we comment that we have seen movement with regards to CCOD. Like I alluded to earlier, we are currently busy with the 14-15 audits, and we are hoping to get the rest of the financial statements in the next few months. The ones that are in progress is with the NDOH, is where there was commitments to strengthen the process and controls to improve the quality of the financial statements and performance reporting. We have seen some movement, especially with the financial statements, because in the prior years, they used to have issues on accruals, commitments, and their assets. However, we've noted that in the current year, they did a lot of work to improve their accruals. However, they still have problems with commitments and their tangible assets. Also, with the implementation of the information system that's reliable, is what my colleague also alluded to, that they are doing something. However, the system that they have is not adequate enough. Like, for example, she indicated on the LIMS in our quarter four when it crashed, that then had direct impact on the indicators relating to LIMS because then we couldn't get information. And the recommendations that we've included is that the committee should continue requesting feedback from the department and the entities on the implementation of the action plans and the recommendations that have been provided by the HSA, and also require feedback on the key controls and the key projects that we've highlighted, and also on the with regards to the consequence management to request the department, especially in the entities, on the updates with the investigations that they have, because like I've indicated earlier, that the investigation is actually too long, takes too long, and we are not sure of the outcome.
So far in the presentation, that's the last slide with regards to the portfolio. I'll then hand over to my colleague who will then go through the health sector audit outcomes. I would like to highlight the fact that with these audit outcomes, these are specifically based on the audit of financial statements, pre-trial emergency and compliance. The sector focus areas that we usually present to the committee, which are on either from pharmaceuticals, medical equipment, as well as maternal health, that presentation will come at a later stage. We are currently reconciling the findings that we got on the ground from the sector, and then at a later stage we will then come and present the outcomes of the health sector focus areas that we scoped in for the current year.
Thank you, Chairperson and honourable members. As my colleague has alluded, I'll be doing a high-level feedback on the audit outcome of the health sector. So in keeping with the five-year trend, we've included the overall audit outcome, compliance with key legislation, and quality of submitted annual performance reports in our presentation. For the overall audit outcome, there has been a stagnation in the audit outcome when we look at year-on-year performance. Because for Eastern Cape, Gauteng, Free State and National, and Western Cape, they had unqualified opinion with findings, as you can see from previous year as well. And for KZN, Limpopo and Mpumalanga, they had qualified opinion. And when we did the assessment, we noted that the qualification areas that we still seeing in the current year on the movable assets which are not being accounted for correctly, and also the completeness, the accurate accounting of the completeness of commitments and accruals. The Northwest, as you can see, they haven't provided us with their audit outcome due to the political unrest that has been happening in the area. The audit has not yet been finalized. When looking at the compliance with key legislation, the concern in this area is the quality of financial statements that have been submitted for audit. There's a number of provinces which submitted financial statements that required material adjustments, which resulted them in receiving the opinion that has been expressed. There's also a number of inadequate systems in SCM environment that has resulted in non-compliance. Also, the internal controls in place for detecting and preventing of unauthorized, irregular, and fraudulent and wasteful expenditure are still not matured or are not being implemented effectively. With regards to performance audits, the sector scoped in programs 2, which is district health services, and program 4, which is provincial hospital services. All the provinces had material findings on performance information. The findings mostly were noted, including the inadequate information system for collecting of data, as noted by our IT auditors, and also the manual controls in place and poor filing has resulted in auditors being unable to verify the reported achievements. If we move to the next slide illustrates the movement in irregular expenditure. When we talk about irregular expenditure, we talk that's where we say expenditure that has been incurred in contravention with key legislation where prescribed processes were not followed. And also, it also illustrates the unauthorized expenditure, which is expenditure incurred not in line with the budgeted vote or overspending on the budget. So if we look at irregular expenditure, there has been a slight decrease in irregular expenditure, which we commend the provinces. And if you can see, most of the irregular expenditure was identified by the auditees. However, there's still a concern that even though the auditees are able to identify irregular expenditure, the internal controls that they have in place are not effective enough to prevent the occurrence of irregular expenditure.
And on unauthorized expenditure, there has been a slight increase in unauthorized expenditure. The unauthorized expenditure was identified by the auditee, but it's also a concern that their internal controls are not matured, or the planning of the department is not adequate, as there's unauthorized expenditure that has been noted. If we move to the next slide, the next slide is for information purposes, where we're highlighting where we've noted the highest contributors of irregular expenditure and also unauthorized expenditure. And if we look under irregular expenditure, it's mostly because of poor management or ineffective contract management that is happening at the provinces. If we move to the next slide, the management and delivery of key programs. So as part of our value add initiative, we do what we call we follow the money, where we look at the budgeting stages up to service delivery, how has the money been spent by the provinces. So for that, we selected the sub-program HIV and AIDS under Program 2, District Health Services, where we looked at the three initiatives, which is patient-initiated and remaining on earth, the condom distribution, and also prevention of mother-to-child transmission. With regards to the budget versus the spending, the HIV grant that was allocated under this program shows that there was no significant over or underspending of the grant. However, if we move to financial management, we're still noting that there's issues around the accounting of commitments and accruals in the provinces. With compliance findings, there was irregular expenditure that have been noted, and it relates to the goods and services where were procured from suppliers that were not listed in the approved list of suppliers, and also there were contracts that were not provided for the procuring of services for male circumcision doctors. With regards to the predetermined objectives, where we look at whether the provinces managed to achieve their targets for the selected indicators, there we see some of the targets were not achieved for condom and ART initiative, related initiatives, due to delays in payments of condom suppliers and suppliers being unable to meet demand. So that's what we just needed. We wanted to give feedback on with regards to the health sector. And Chairperson, on the last slide, there we're just highlighting the fact that in an environment where there's monopoly, the use of discretion without accountability increases the risk of corruption. So where there is an increase in corruption, service delivery is likely to be impacted or compromised. Thank you, Chair.
You are done? Okay. No, thank you very much, Office of the AG. Questions? Honorable Ndaba? For now, Honorable Ndaba?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chair, it's just a comment with regards to condom distribution. It's just unfortunate, Chair, that, you know, we always receive a report on how much money was spent in terms of condoms. But whether those condoms were received by the beneficiaries, and whether we can be able to measure impact on the distribution of those condoms. I think as the Portfolio Committee one time chair, we need to do our own research because I think even yourself and myself and other members, we do have interest to see whether there's value for money, because when you look at Program 3, there's a lot of money that is spent on that program, which I'm sure even your office should have interest on how the money is being utilized, not just checking whether there are checks and balances and so on and receipts and what, but just go deeper and check if really and truly there's value for money. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Maisel.
Thank you, Chair. The audit report is an eye-opener, and it simply shows that on our part and everybody's part, we are not up to scratch in doing what we're supposed to be doing, because if we are going to wait for the auditor to tell us that we should demand answers every quarter, and maybe even if we demand the answers and we don't get them, or it keeps on repeating and there are no consequences, so there is no deterrent, and this thing will keep on going on and on. And if the improvement are very slight, where there are improvement and there is regression, and it is simply means that there are no consequences, and without consequences there is no deterrent. The IT saga shows that either there is a deliberate fraud in the whole system, or the people who support, who they are accounting, don't know a thing about what it is all about. They just say, well, you are doing something, and they accept that. Then there is a disaster here. We need something to be, some expert to look into this and find out where are we going wrong. Because it can't just go on like this, and it seems like we accept casualties for the sake of just accepting it, either because we don't know what it is all about, or because somebody is defrauding the department somewhere. So I think we need to look into that. Well, your recommendations are taken to heart, and I think the only thing that needs to be done is to strengthen the consequential part of it, that there must be consequences. Otherwise, it's doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different outcomes. So that needs to be done. The rest, you've done your work, and the ball is in our court, and what to do with it. It's no use going through this thing over again. It's self-evident that there is something rotten here that is not being done properly, and that the ball is in our court to do it properly and demand answers as part of our oversight work here, and make sure that either the whole thing is corrected forthwith, or consequences must be visited on the miscreants. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Wilson.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. I just want to refer to page 16 of your presentation, which is the quality of APP and analysis of expenditure per program versus performance achievements. And my particular concern on that page is Program 2, the National Health Insurance Health Planning and Systems Enablement. Now, prior to your presentation, as you know, we had the FFC here. And one of the biggest concerns raised by the FFC was the NHI grants that are not being spent on the NHI. They're being used to subsidize all sorts of other shortages, meds, HIV, and that kind of thing. So it then becomes quite alarming when you see that there were 27 targets planned and 21 achieved. Because if we are to hear what the FFC said, in provinces that the budgets for NHI were actually used for things that were not NHI related at all. So I just question how we get 21 out of 7 when we know that in the provinces the money wasn't actually used for NHI projects. Thank you.
Any other questions, Reverend Dabo?
My apologies for not raising all my questions, Chair. I think on page 24, I see here, Chair, with regards to CCOD, you remember, we've been raising this issue with CCOD that they were not audited for the past these years that you are mentioning. But I think one will be interested, Chair, to see the outcome reports of all these audit outcomes since they are now submitting. And I can see that a 2014-15 audit is currently in progress. As the Portfolio Committee, for the past 4.5 years, we've been worried about this non-compliance of CCOD, but I'm sure you will give us the report of the audit outcomes. And my other question, Chair, was with regards to National Health Laboratory Services. I see here you are saying slow response by management, accounting officer or senior management. I wanted to check with you. Instability of, you know what I wanted to ask, Chair, it's the vacancies of senior managers, whether they have advertised those posts or they haven't advertised, because I think these vacancies have been vacant for a long time, except for the one of the CEO, that the CEO was on suspension, is it the CEO, yeah. The CEO is on suspension. I just want to check with you whether do you have any answer for that, whether they have advertised or not. But my last one, Chair, is the last, I don't know what I must say, whether I must say it's a sentence or what, the one that says lack of understanding. Is it understanding? Or understating of compliance with applicable laws and regulations. This one is worrisome. But how come that the department can have a people who don't understand their responsibilities or the laws that they need to apply when they deal with finances or whatever, whether it's in the procurement or whatever, when they are executing their duties. You know, this one is even worse because it leaves one to have a serious concern on whether they have appointed rightful people with the correct qualifications or what exactly is happening here. Because, you know, we can't have people who will produce certificates, but they don't have knowledge on what exactly they should be doing. You know, this one is even worse. Hence, it tells us that maybe these are some of the things that make the department to find themselves in all the comments that you have raised here when you were doing your audit. Thank you very much, Chair President.
Honourable Cooper.
Thank you, Chair. Mine is not a question but a comment, Chair. Having sitting here, listening to the presentation, reading everything, those things, Chair, they've been said to us since 2009, while what is being here. So I was asking myself, it's like we've reached the ceiling, there's no improvement in anything, what you said, especially with regard to NHL, National Health Laboratory Service. What has been said here is all what we know for those years, but there's nothing that is happening, Chair. So which means somewhere, somehow, we need to do something, because really this has been happening continuously. It's like we enjoy to come and listen to these things, but there's no consequence management. So something is lacking in terms of leadership. I think it's high time now we take action, even ourselves as a portfolio committee. Even the national department, I think now maybe the minister must do something, because really the NHL story, it has been happening for years. Like, what is worrying me, what is even worse, to see that 95% total of irregular expenditure in this NHL is still there. So really, I don't know, Chair, what to say, but really we'll be listening to this song, Chair. Now I think it's time for action now.
Any response?
Thank you, Chair. with regards to the value for money that was raised by the Honourable Member, to some extent we do look at specific projects. Like, for example, on the presentation I highlighted the two projects that we're taking over the project lifecycle, which was the Siloam Hospital. So in that process, in a way, we are then addressing the value for money. We are then looking at the project and saying, when we look at what to spend and what to receive, are you getting value for money? And that's where, in that process, they're looking at it, they then identified fruitless and wasteful expenditure, which, like I highlighted, was going to possible fruitless and wasteful expenditure for the redesign cost. For us, this is another way of looking at the projects to check whether the money they are spending, they're actually getting value for. We usually do that on specific projects that we select. We don't look at the overall program. For example, you indicated the program 3, which is the HIV/AIDS one. So the slide, the last slide that she was presenting on the key projects, is part of the initiatives we are then starting to look at specific focus areas to say, there's 18 billion that was allocated for the HIV/AIDS grant. When we look at the spending, we most probably noting maybe 100% expenditure, but then we're noting that with financial management, we still have problems with commitments and accruals. When we're looking at the compliance, we're still having problems with the procurement process, and we're looking at also the achievement of the targets. Not all of them are then achieved. So in our report, that's what we are highlighting to say there's this much that has been spent, however, there's specific processes that are not in place to then assist with the service delivery. There was a question asked on Program 2 for the NHI grants. So when we look at the Program 2, the indicators, the targets that we included in here are indicators that are sitting at the National Department of Health. So what happens is a portion of the budget then gets transferred to the provinces. So the analysis of the achievement of the targets at the provinces will be then sitting on the report of the provinces. But the 21 indicators that we included here are the indicators sitting at the National Department of Health. And most of them, you find that they are indicators talking to the monitoring of activities taking place in the provinces. So from the national point of view, they'll be able to prove to us that we were monitoring and this is the report, but it doesn't necessarily mean that with the indicators in the provinces, there's an achievement. So for the exact picture linking what the FFC was presenting and the achievement, we then have to go to the specific provinces to look at what was the achievement rate for the NHI grant. When you move to the CCOD 2014-15 audit, we indicate in the presentation, we are still busy with the audit outcomes with the actual audit of the 2014-15 financial year, and when we have concluded that, we can come to the committee and present the audit outcomes. So we are currently in the final stages and concluding. When it's done, we can come and present to the portfolio committee. There was a question on the vacancies at the NHLS. Currently, my understanding is that the cases for the CFO and CEO, I don't think has been concluded, there's still suspension. However, with the head of internal audit, I can confirm that they have advertised for the head of internal audit. I think the advert is still open. So with the two cases of the CEO and the CFO, it's still, the case are still ongoing. And that's why we're still having an acting CEO and acting CFO at the NHLS. Talking to the lack of understanding with laws and regulations, the slide indicates that the root causes took place at the NHLS, MRC, and the CMS. It's not necessarily at the National Department of Health. And those are the three entities that had material findings of non-compliance laws and regulations. And like I alluded in the presentation, when we engage with them, for example, when you look at the MRC, even in their own financial statements, they actually do state that they were not aware of specific principles of local content. So this is what the feedback we are getting when we're engaging with them, when you're trying to get to the root cause of why is this non-compliance taking place. The feedback we're getting is the SCM officials responsible, some of them lack the competence to understand the actual compliance. With CMS as well, there was the SCM official that was responsible, actually was dismissed, so then, which means that when there's a gap, the remaining officials then didn't really understand the laws and regulations, and that's why there was non-compliance with laws and regulations. I think I've addressed all the questions, Chair, unless if there's a question I missed, the member can highlight to me.
No, thank you very much. It's a request. It's on, if on page 28 you are able to give us the picture of the unauthorized and irregular expenditure for the sector. I think it will also be advisable that even on key projects that have been tested, which is on page 30, I'm lacking this word now, I'm tired. If you're able to, yes, to be specific, precisely because of the question that has been asked by Honorable Ndaba, a concern that has been raised. And because for argument's sake, we are to go to conduct an oversight here in the Western Cape tomorrow, and we get a complete different picture. We're not going to be able to then ask them, but you were audited, and this is what the Auditor General's office is saying about you in terms of condom distribution. I'm making an example. So it's very general. It does not assist us even in then checking with the National Department of Health. So I would appreciate if then that can happen. But I also want to thank, because in the last years we have never had a picture on IT, what exactly is happening. I think now we have been, this thing that IT is not decentralized, and that the left hand does not know what the right hand is doing in a very, very important area, which the National Department is then trying to address that. But even itself in moving forward, because they are in provinces, there's IT in provinces, what is happening there? So I think in moving forward, would also appreciate why personally I'm worried at times with a generic information is that it's not empowering us when we are to conduct an oversight, even to the department, with an understanding that the frustration that Honorable Kopana was raising is the frustration all of us were having. Even the department, even if you listen at times to the minister, we have got a serious challenge of the issue of concurrence. in the health sector, work is where it's at a provincial level. And provinces are governed. The National Health Act, what is it saying? The executive is to do A, B, C, D. And I'm saying maybe it's something the next administration will have to look into this. What is it that we are to do as much as the buck is to stop with the National Department of Health, but where work is being done, where condoms are being distributed, are distributed in the at a provincial level. So we that is the request from our side, and I think this issue of the IT on the NHLS. The unfortunate part about NHLS is that we are frustrated, but we can't be. We'll have to this slow pace of these cases. That it's almost the second year now, and unfortunately, we can't interfere with that. We'll have to wait. But we're happy that you are saying at least there is a post then that has been advertised. We will when the National Department of Health and entities are coming to for their presentations, there are issues that we will have to check with them, so that because at the end they are the people that are to account. But thank you very much for enlightening us, frustrated as we are. But I think we will then be able to pinpoint. You were here when FFC was raising some of the issues, which again are talking to what is then happening in the sector, in particular at a provincial level. With that, I think we have come the end of our presentation for today. Honourable members, unfortunately, the MRC is out of the country. So we were to also have them. So today, I think we have come to the end of our presentation and our work. I'm told lunch is available; it's going to be served. I would humbly request that, as much as we are concerned about wasteful expenditure, as a committee, we must also not have. So we'll have to wait for it so that it doesn't. You have been given these forms. I hope as the presentation has been and you have been asking questions, you were then able to fill in and they will collect them when we are done with them. Thank you very much, honorable members.